Friends, we're here this evening to further orient you to the work of the Lausanne movement. This morning I had opportunity to visit several of the small groups, and everywhere I went, when I would sit down, they would say, "Would you please help us to get a better understanding of what the Lausanne movement is all about?" So we're eager to do that this evening. And I think one of the best ways that we can do that is to introduce you to people whose lives have been significantly changed and impacted by the work of the Lausanne movement around the world. This evening, just a few minutes before the service began, I called John Stott, who is our honorary chairman. He is now in a nursing home in London where he is recovering from a broken hip and a hip replacement surgery. And I gave him an update on what is happening here. And I said, "Uncle John, there are over 525 leaders from more than 110 countries who are here in Malaysia this evening." And he said, "That's wonderful." He said, "I'm thrilled to hear that." He said, "Would you please give the Lausanne younger leaders my blessing?" He said, "I remember fondly, with warm memories, our time in Singapore in 1987. And now it seems as though this is an even more significant gathering. Let them know that I am praying for them." So how wonderful can this be, to have Billy Graham up on the mountain in Montreat, North Carolina, and John Stott in a nursing home in London, England, and thousands of people praying for us. Certainly God is in our midst. And so I give you love and greetings from John Stott. Now, something caught my attention. He said to me, he said, "Please give the Lausanne younger leaders my warmest greetings." He didn't say, "Please give greetings to those younger leaders who are at the Lausanne gathering." You are now considered Lausanne younger leaders. If John Stott says so, you're in. Okay? So this is not explanation or introduction. This is orientation. This is Lausanne 101. You are the Lausanne younger leaders. Welcome to the movement. Now, I want you to meet one of the, I wouldn't say the oldest younger leaders here, but a former chairman, Fergus MacDonald. Fergus, would you please stand? Fergus MacDonald has spent his career with the Bible Societies. He has been a chairman for the Lausanne movement. And currently, this younger leader is completing his PhD in Bible engagement at the University of Edinburgh. How about that? Okay? And that, my friends, is the spirit of Lausanne, still learning, still studying, still hoping, still building new partnerships. Thank you so much, Fergus, for being with us from Edinburgh, Scotland, here in all of his glory, but without his bagpipes. Also, I want for you to meet two women who give leadership to the Lausanne movement, particularly to the women's network around the world. Robin Clayton and Elka Werner, are you here? And can I see you? Okay. Robin Clayton, the vice chairman of Lausanne, from Sydney, Australia, and Elka Werner from Marburg, Germany. And the role of the Lausanne Women's Network is to mentor, to motivate, and to mobilize women for world evangelization. And we are concerned not only to bring younger leaders, but also particularly to emphasize the role that women play in the proclamation and the incarnation of the gospel around the world. Thank you so much. And now I'd like to ask a younger leader to come. And Andrew is going to share with us how Lausanne has impacted his life and how it captured his imagination. Andrew, please join me in welcoming Andrew Brummy.
Well, thank you, Doug. And it's so good to be with all of you. Do you ever just stop and look around at the diversity of people that are here and just stop and praise God? Can we just praise God for that? Look at your neighbors. Look at each other. It is such a beautiful diversity. It is exciting. Well, I get to briefly tell you my Lausanne story. 4 years ago, I was sitting in a classroom in California and in my university where I attended, and I was handed a copy of the Lausanne Covenant. I'd never heard of Lausanne, its history, the movement. I didn't even know how to pronounce Lausanne, which maybe many of you still don't. I'm not sure if I pronounce it correctly. But I was handed the Lausanne Covenant, and we had to read through it and discuss it. And I was gripped by what I read. And there's a lot of things in there, and you have it in your handbooks, I think, and you can read through it. But what gripped me above all was the repentant spirit and the humility that permeated the document. In Section 7, the people who framed the covenant, who wrote it 3 decades ago, said, "We confess that our testimony has sometimes been marred by a sinful individualism and needless duplication." And knowing that nearly 3,000 leaders from around the world, not people from the same mindset or the same background, but a diverse sampling of leaders like we have here tonight, confess that together and sign their names to this covenant was very moving to me. And somehow, as I read on through the covenant and saw the mission and the passion to which these leaders affirmed and were called, I was moved. And I said, Lord, I want to be a part of whatever this is. I don't understand Lausanne. I don't know about it. This is a document that I see. But whatever Lausanne is about, I want to be a part of. So I went online, and I looked at the Lausanne website, and I learned a little more about some of the gatherings that they'd had over time. And I saw that there was a gathering coming in 2004 in Thailand, the 2004 Forum. And I emailed Lausanne out of the blue and said, you don't know me, and I don't know you, but I've read the covenant, and I like what you're about. I need to be there. I need to be at the 2004 Forum. I'll serve coffee. I'll clean floors. Whatever you need, I'll do it. I just want to be there, because every time that I've seen historically, just from the little research I did, when Lausanne calls a gathering and a diverse sampling of the body of Christ comes together, God moves. And whether it's documents that come out or covenants that are produced or relationships that are built or the furtherance of the Great Commission, it's significant. And so I wanted to be there. So I went back and forth with them a few times, and they were, I think, thinking I was maybe a stranger at first or a little bit crazy perhaps, but I eventually met with them, and they let me come as a volunteer to the 2004 Forum in Thailand, and it was an amazing experience. I didn't have to serve coffee or even clean floors. I actually got to serve on the communications team, and I went and visited several of the issue groups that took place there. There were 31 issue groups, and they were all focused on an amazing opportunity presented by the current time in which we live for the advancement of the gospel, or a big obstacle that the church needed to, with God's grace and wisdom, overcome. And so I got to sit in on these different meetings, but there was one in particular that moved me deeply. A lot of them did, but I want to share about one with you. And part of my task at the forum was to write a blog every day on the internet, just to share a personal reflection. And so this is a couple of sentences from my blog from one of those days. And this was the issue group focused on reconciliation, which was dealing with tribal conflict, ethnic conflict, racial conflict, and how does the gospel get communicated in places where there is a history of conflict and a need for reconciliation. So I want to share this with you. Are you all familiar with the genocide that took place in Rwanda in the 90s? Yes? No? If not, ask your neighbor afterwards. Today I sat in on part of the issue group on reconciliation and experienced the deeply practical nature of this forum. I watched as a Hutu from Burundi embraced a Tutsi and sought forgiveness on behalf of his tribe. With as much gravity as the situation demanded, the Tutsi man replied, "I forgive you." And the room erupted in applause. As they brought the issue group meeting to a close, they cried out to God for a revelation of how to build the kingdom of God, not just in heaven, but on earth today. This is the 2004 Forum. And that was a tiny sampling of how I saw God moving there. And what I caught when I read the Lausanne Covenant was the spirit of Lausanne that Doug and others have talked about. And I got to experience that firsthand at the 2004 Forum. And out of that, I actually now work in the U.S. for the U.S. expression of the Lausanne Committee called the Mission America Coalition, serving the former chairman of Lausanne, Paul Cedar, and getting to continue in that spirit of Lausanne. And it's so exciting to be here with you. I see that spirit taking place and being formed and developed in all of us, that spirit of humility and prayer and partnership. I want to close with a brief quote that John Stott, who Doug just spoke with, wrote about a decade ago, but I feel like he could have written it to us tonight, or that he could have just shared it with Doug. He wrote, "A new generation of younger evangelical leaders has arisen who are not familiar with Lausanne or with the basic theological and missiological thinking incorporated in its reports. Ignorance of this groundwork may lead younger missionaries and missionary candidates to relay the foundations or reinvent the wheel." Brothers and sisters, we have no need to relay the foundation or reinvent the wheel, because there's a generation and generations that have gone before us and laid this groundwork and this foundation. Let us carry the mantle and build upon it and carry in the spirit of Lausanne. Immerse yourself in its history. Immerse yourself in the people and the connection and the leaders of Lausanne that are here, and learn about it and learn how you can connect. If you have a passion for world evangelization, Lausanne has a place for you to join in. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You can take that with you. You can take that with you. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you very much. I want to just mention one thing. If it sounds to you like there's a Korean prayer meeting going on behind the stage, that's actually the translators. And when we met with them this afternoon, they said, "We are so excited about what we're hearing, and we're so eager to get it across clearly to our people that when you get excited, we get excited." So translators, if you're back there, we want you to know that we appreciate you. And I also promised you I'd give you a little break. Do you have anything to say to us?
Thank you.
Okay, they're back there. Good. Okay, just a few things. If we could put up one of the slides about what is Lausanne, I want to just give you a few easy pegs to hang your thinking on. First of all, would you put up the full slide if you don't mind, so we have it all there at once so I remember what Lausanne is. Four C's to help you remember Lausanne. Lausanne is a city in Switzerland, a beautiful city, where a congress was held in 1974. You now have heard that many times, a historic congress. A covenant was produced, perhaps the most significant missions document ever produced in the Protestant era. And if you haven't read it already, I would encourage you to read it in your congress note, in your gathering notebook. And finally, Lausanne is a continuing movement. It's best understood as a global network of men and women who are committed to world evangelization. Secondly, you can understand Lausanne in terms of it being a vision and a spirit, the vision of the whole church taking the whole gospel to the whole world. You've got it by now. And then the spirit of Lausanne, which we've talked about it in terms of being a spirit of humility and fellowship, prayer, study, partnership, and hope. And then if you would move on to the next slide, please, which has to do with understanding the mission of Lausanne. What does Lausanne actually do? And again, I'll give you six P's, which will work in English. It will not translate nicely. But this will just simply help you. That Lausanne creates the platform or the forum in which church and mission leaders can gather together and discuss the most pressing mission issues, both in terms of theological reflection and also strategic action. Secondly, the Lausanne leadership helps to establish priorities for the world. Out of all the things that could be done, what are the priorities? And Paul Eshelman, who was up here earlier, along with the strategy working group, has helped to establish 12 priorities towards the next 4 years. Partnerships are established. Publications, the Lausanne Occasional Papers are produced. And people, especially younger leaders, are identified and developed. And finally, prayer is mobilized for world evangelization. Someone asked me this morning, why did it disappear? From 74 to 89, this was a very powerful and a visible movement. But in the 90s, there was somewhat of a divide, that there were people in the movement who thought, we've done enough thinking, we've produced enough papers, we've got to get on with the job. And there was a fascination with the year 2000, the change of a millennium, and there were all kinds of plans to complete the job by the year 2000. We believe in Lausanne that there should be a place both for the theologian and the evangelist. We believe that all theological reflection must lead to missiological action. And we believe that all mission action must have a theological foundation. If you pull the action off of the foundation, you'll have mere pragmatics. If you have only theological reflection, it will be arcane and meaningless. And so as the 90s came to an end and we moved into this new century, there's an attempt to put theology and practice back together, and thus the revitalization and the rebirth of the Lausanne movement. I want to just share a little bit about why it is that I am so indebted to the Lausanne movement. I want to just talk about three people very briefly that I met at the Singapore 87 Younger Leaders Gathering. And I think you would probably realize that the Lausanne spirit is something that is more caught than taught. That as we're here together in the context, marinating in the spirit of Lausanne, you're beginning to catch on to what this is all about. And it's already been declared by John Sutt that you are the younger leader, so it's imperative that you understand what the Lausanne spirit and what the Lausanne movement is all about. It was actually the example of John Stott at that conference in Singapore in 1987. Here is one of the most respected, well-known, highly regarded religious leaders in the world. And there he was at the University of Singapore, staying in the dormitory, eating in the cafeteria. This person who writes books and speaks everywhere did not speak one time publicly, didn't distribute any of his books. He was simply there to encourage us, to be with us, to share us, to empower a new generation. And I thought, I want to be like that man. Secondly, I want to share an experience that is somewhat embarrassing for me. I met a person there at the Younger Leaders Gathering from Sri Lanka, a man named Kumar Abraham. I have followed Kumar's ministry and his life now for the last 20 years. But as we were talking one day between sessions out on the sidewalk in front of the auditorium, he was telling me about his training center in the Philippines. And he said, Doug, do you have any younger leaders in Japan who might be interested to come to the Philippines and study with us? And I was smiling and nodding and said, well, let me think about it. But in the back of my mind, a thought began to become conscious in my thinking. And I thought, why would a person from Japan want to go to the Philippines to study with a Sri Lankan when he could stay right in his own country and work with an American? Well, I'm glad you laughed, because that's the way Japanese would mask their embarrassment. And when that subconscious thought became conscious in my mind, I thought, where did that thought come from? Am I better than a Sri Lankan? Am I better than a Filipino? Am I superior to a Japanese person? But it was being out of my familiar environment and being with this person. And when I went back to my room, I knelt by my bed and I wept and I asked God to forgive me of that sinful pride. And as I observed the life of Kumar Abraham, and as I also heard the ministry of Ajit Fernanda, who is now with us, it occurred to me that the best people come from the hardest places. And God is doing His best work in the most difficult situations. I was reminded that my citizenship is not in the United States of America, but I am a citizen of the eternal kingdom. And I was reminded that I am not to be a person building my own empire based upon the wealth or prestige of my own society, but rather to be a kingdom seeker who seeks first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. What I experienced at Singapore 87 was like dropping a pebble in a pond, and the ripples have continued to go out over the last 20 years as I'm working out the implications of what I learned there and as I'm continuing to build upon the papers that I read and the friendships that have been nurtured. We want you to participate and to be immersed in this reality. This cannot be simply an event, and we have talked about this. If this is only an event, this is a terribly expensive summer camp. But if this does indeed birth a movement, and if it does indeed unleash DNA in you in terms of this spirit of humility and prayer and partnership that we have talked about, then God indeed will have done a great and wonderful thing. Now I'm going to ask my friend Ramez Atallah from Cairo, Egypt, who I met at Singapore 87, to come and share something about Lausanne 3. We are planning the third Lausanne Congress in 2010. We believe that the world is needy. We believe that the church is fragmented. We're out of focus when it comes to our priorities for world evangelization. And so, Ramez, I'm going to ask you to share something about our vision and our plan for Lausanne 3 in 2010. And before you do, just one little commercial. All of the resources, all 60 of the Lausanne Occasional Papers, video clips of Billy Graham at Lausanne 74, many documents are available on this CD, which will be distributed to you at the end of the meeting. Thank you very much. Thank you. Ramez.
Thank you, Doug. 2 days ago, am I on? Yeah, okay. 2 days ago, a friend of mine from Egypt who was here for a prayer conference met Doug for just a few minutes in the lobby, and he came out and told me, this man is anointed by the Spirit of God with humility. And one of the reasons I've come back to the Lausanne movement is because of Doug's leadership. What my friend probably thought in the back of his mind, Doug, and didn't want to articulate even to me, is he would have said, that's very strange for an American. We thank God for the Lausanne movement, the spirit of a Lausanne movement, where whoever you are, from wherever you come, God's spirit can use you to challenge, to build, to encourage. And I want to tell you a testimony of my Lausanne story. I was born in Egypt, and as a teenager, escaped the country when the government nationalized all the big businessmen. My grandfather was a very wealthy businessman, and we had to leave, and we escaped to Canada to make a new life away from socialist Egypt. arriving in Canada, in a new country, I actually went before my family, I was discipled or evangelized as an international student by a local Canadian church. I came to know the Lord Jesus Christ in Canada through the love of Canadian Christians. I was then discipled through the InterVarsity group at McGill University, where I was a student. And I was taught and trained through an American seminary at Gordon Conwell Seminary. So I have a big debt to the Western world for reaching me with the gospel of Jesus, for training me, and for giving me a vision. In 1980, with my wife and two children, I returned to Egypt to serve my people there, and I've been back in Egypt ever since. That's a short summary of a lot of experience. But my story with Lausanne began by my being invited to lead a seminar or a workshop at Lausanne 74. It was, I was 27 at the time, and I had written to the program person, I had been invited to go to the conference, and I'd written complaining about the fact that there wasn't a seminar on Roman Catholicism. So a program chairman, director whom I happened to know, wrote back and said, we need someone to present it. If you present it, we'll pay half your way to go to the conference. As a poor student, I decided, or as a poor student worker who was not having enough money to go, I needed that money. And so in 3 weeks, I became the evangelical expert on Roman Catholicism. My paper was not well accepted at Lausanne because I had a different perspective than that which was held at that time by evangelicals. I was asking for much more for dialogue with Roman Catholics who are open to studying the scriptures, and this was not considered appropriate at the time, so it wasn't a very enjoyable workshop. But I wore a speaker's badge. 27 years old, the president of Gordon Conwell was there, and he looked at me, and many great leaders were there without speaker's badges. And so I felt very important. And it was quite a prestige thing. But the most moving thing that happened to me at Lausanne 74 was on the way back. It was a long way back to Canada, and I had a lot of papers to go through, and I had taken a lot of cards, business cards, from all sorts of people whom I'd met. And you know, you collect these cards, you put them in your pocket, and you don't even notice them. And one little card was not very well printed, and I looked at it. Until now, I get emotional, because like Doug, it broke me. You see, we had small groups every night, about 10 of us in our dormitory rooms, and we used to pray together and share together. First night, we introduced ourselves, president of a seminary, pastor of a church with 2,000 people. Everybody was showing how great they were. I said, I lead the InterVarsity movement in the province of Quebec. Didn't matter that I very small work, but sounded good. And one African man who was with us says, I'm a pastor in Kenya. During the week, we listened to each other. I didn't pay much attention to the pastor in Kenya. I wanted to get close to the important people. But the pastor in Kenya's stories of how God had touched him as a school teacher during the African revival and changed his life, how the five children born, he had 10 children, the five born after his conversion were so much happier and felt so much luckier than the five who were born before his conversion. And he shared a lot, and I felt he was a deep man. And I said, maybe working in a humble little village in Africa, that's the way he grew. But when I picked up that card on the plane back to Canada, it said, Festo Olang, Archbishop of Kenya. In our group was the biggest churchman you could have. The Anglican Church is the biggest church in Kenya. This was a big wig. This was a man who could pull rank on anybody in that group. But we didn't know. And he didn't tell us. He did not use his position to get his identity. He was a simple pastor who loved Jesus. And like Doug, when he was at 87 and saw John Stott sitting at the back and being willing to attend all the conference, even though we told him, we're inviting you, but we're not inviting you to speak. We want you to sit as a model of a humble person. There are only two or three people we could invite, big leaders whom we knew we had the guts to invite and tell them that. In the same way that Doug was touched by that, I was moved to the core, and I remember it now, 32 years later. I said, that's the kind of leader I want to be. Leadership, Jesus style. And brothers and sisters, the world we live in with television and popularity and everything goes counter, completely counter to that servant leader of Jesus. We want to be a servant leader, but we want to be a popular one with a big mega church and a lot of followers. And we have difficulty following with humility. Anyway, I was invited to join the Lausanne Committee when they looked for a younger leader. It was easy for them to choose the person who was the youngest speaker. So they chose me. I later joked and said, if I was only, as well as being a Middle Eastern and young, if I was black and a woman, I probably would have been on every committee. But at least I got on half of them. And I spent 20 years on the Lausanne Committee. And I'm one of the few people who was discipled by osmosis on a committee. Leighton Ford became the chairman and asked me to be his assistant. So even though I was on the larger 50-man committee, he took me along to every single meeting that Lausanne had in the 70s and the early 80s. And they had many meetings, if you get on the website. And I went along to assist the chairman on these meetings, to do his telephone calls, to carry his bags, to do Joe jobs. But I also sat in on these meetings. And I was discipled and developed by watching men and women of God in these meetings. Some I yearned to emulate, and some I decided I definitely didn't want to be like them. I saw the good and the bad. There were times of tension, of difficulty, and of struggle. But it was a time that formed me as a person. I owe a lot to these 20 years on the Lausanne Committee. I'm going to share with you, and we'll see if this thing works. It doesn't. Kelly, I've pushed the button, so you need to push it from your end. It doesn't work. Could you please go to the next slide? They told me it could work, but it doesn't. It doesn't seem they can change. Can you change to the next slide, please? I'm going to talk about technology later. I think I didn't do too well. Okay. There are three, they're not really priorities. They're distinctives of a Lausanne movement that I want to share with you tonight. Things that I saw that Lausanne brought to the evangelical world in a way that did not exist before that. Integrity, vision, and cooperation. Let's look at integrity to start off with. That's the next slide, people. Okay, this is not going to work. Next slide. I'll talk and they'll try to change slides, right? Okay. When Doug spoke, he spoke about the whole gospel, that the Lausanne movement tried to talk about bringing the whole gospel. That word was very carefully chosen. No switch. Okay, we'll keep going. It was very carefully chosen because during the Lausanne Congress, some of the speakers said evangelicalism has a truncated gospel, a gospel that's been chopped up, a gospel that is lacking, a gospel that is not complete. We preach only part of a gospel. We don't preach the whole gospel. And I wish those slides would change because I want to read you something. Any hope that you can get? I'll start reading slowly. We learn to improvise. In Egypt, it always happens this way. You don't expect it here. In the Lausanne Covenant, there are statements written, not just because someone wanted to write them, but because a lot of us younger evangelicals in the 60s and 70s had lost faith in the evangelical movement. Evangelicals seemed to be fundamentalists. They seemed to be right-wing. They were not concerned with the real issues of the world. And when you mentioned these issues, they considered you a liberal or a World Council of Churches person. There was a feeling that to be relevant in society, we're not. Here's a statement. Thank you. Those who are working by translation, if you open your book, you can look at these. I'm going to section 5, 9, and 10 in the Lausanne Covenant. And I I know it's late. I know you don't like study. I know you don't like reading. And we've heard a lot. But I want to take time because one of the distinctives of Lausanne is it takes Christian theology seriously. Lausanne was trying to address, yes, we want to evangelize, but we don't want a naive, simplistic, superficial evangelism. We want an evangelism rooted in the Bible, rooted in evangelical theology, an evangelism that's been worked out through people. And the statements we're reading are the result of a lot of discussion, and then they precipitated consultations later on to elaborate them. I'll just read, if I can, slowly, number 5 here. Christian social responsibility. I'm a social worker. I'm trained as a social worker. And when I started in the field of social work, if I talked about social concern, I was considered a liberal Christian. Evangelicals didn't talk about that. World Vision was not yet known. World Relief, holistic mission, vision, missionary, holistic ministry was not an in word. That's 32 years ago. Or maybe we're talking about 40 years ago. We affirm that evangelism and socio-political involvement are both part of our Christian duty. More than 4,000 or 3,000 and some Christians signed that. The message of salvation implies also a message of judgment upon every form of alienation, oppression, and discrimination. And we should not be afraid to denounce evil and injustice wherever they exist. This was a right about turn for evangelicals in 1974. Then the urgency of the evangelistic task. Okay, we're just going to evangelize. Go out and evangelize. God will bless you and make you rich and wealthy if you serve him, right? Health and welfare came after Lausanne, was before Lausanne. All of us are shocked. And a lot of this came from Latin America, where our brothers in Latin America reminded us of the poverty in the third world and the difficulties people are facing. All of us are shocked by the poverty of millions and disturbed by the injustices which cause it. Those of us who live in affluent circumstances accept our duty to develop a simple lifestyle in order to contribute more generously to both relief and evangelism. Every word is loaded. Every word had to be thought out in argument and discussion because it was new. And finally, evangelism and culture. And Paul Eshelman referred to that earlier. Missions have all too frequently exported with the gospel an alien culture. And churches have sometimes been in bondage to culture rather than to scripture. Christ's evangelists, that's you and me, must humbly seek to empty themselves of all but their personal authenticity in order to become the servants of others. And churches, what would churches do? Churches must seek to transform and enrich culture, all for the glory of God. That's why so many of us were excited by this document. It was for once we were proud to be evangelicals in the right way of being proud. I guess we have to watch that. But we felt that we could with integrity say that evangelicalism worldwide, represented in the Lausanne Committee, was something that would have integrity with the whole gospel, not this small itsy-bitsy salvation gospel that didn't cover the total situation of man. And then the next point was that integrity also was involved with the whole church. They tried at this Lausanne gathering to bring together all the reflections of the evangelicalism that existed at that time. Baptists and charismatics had never gotten together in the same Congress. YWAM and OM. That, at those days, was not common. InterVarsity and Campus Crusade and Navigators. On some campuses, they used to fight, etc., etc. It's true. And we got together in Lausanne, and we committed ourselves to work together. The next slide is what Lausanne was about, and it was mentioned earlier. Theologically based strategy and strategic theological reflection. Now, I've been 20, 6 years back in Egypt, 16 of them with a Bible society. I work with the Orthodox and the Catholics, and I think it's presumptuous to say that we serve the whole church. But that's another topic. They always found me difficult to be in Lausanne committee. I always made them uncomfortable by my comments, and that's one point I now disagree with. I think we can claim to represent the whole evangelical church. I don't think we can represent the whole church. But be that as it may, the next point was vision. Lausanne gave me something I didn't have, a burden and a vision for the whole world. They say that now those of us from second world, third world, naked natives can call ourselves majority world Christians. That's a new world. You guys from the West are minority world Christians. We are majority world Christians instead of being naked natives. So anyway, those of us from these cultures do not intuitively think of a worldwide scene. When we think of missions, we think of money we can raise in the West to support our ministries. We don't think of what we can do elsewhere. And what Lausanne gave me as a third world Christian or a majority world Christian was a world vision that I didn't have. A desire to really think of the whole world. And that changed my life. It also developed tools to do it. The things called people groups. We'd never heard about people groups. E1, E2, E3 evangelism. We'd never heard of that concept. The Engel scale of how people get converted. We'd never heard. So they not only told us, think of the whole world, but here are some tools to help you think. And when these tools are grounded with good theology, then you get evangelism that has integrity and has real vision. My vision was broadened. When I came back to Egypt to serve the Lord, I was thinking of how can I reach my whole country, not just a little city. And God has done great things in Egypt through many people who have served the Lord and had a vision to serve Him, many having been influenced through Lausanne, the 87 conference, and other places. Final point is cooperation. Lausanne is not only about integrity and vision. It's about people working together. As I said, different organizations. I still remember when YWAM had raised money to buy a ship and heard that the Logos, the OM ship, had gone aground and was destroyed. The money they had saved for their ship, the YWAM leadership in a prayer meeting decided to give to OM. Now that's cooperation. That's sacrifice. That's thinking of one another. At the Lausanne Congress in 1974, those of us from Canada began thinking of the 1976 Olympics. And we said, what can we do to reach out at the Olympic Games in Montreal? 50 organizations got together under one banner called Aid Olympic, and we all decided to use the same logo, the same imprint. So every organization's literature programs were called Aid Olympic programs. I was on the board and was representing the Aid Olympic Committee in the government of Quebec's Olympic Committee. And at the end, after the Olympics, a Jewish lady got up. Remember, I'm Egyptian. A Jewish lady got up, and she said, we all have to give a hand to Mr. Atala, because Aid Olympique did the most to help welcome people and serve people during the Olympic Games in Montreal in 76. That's a Jewish lady on the Social Services Committee of the Montreal situation saying what Christians did. 50 organizations, all under one banner. It seemed to Montreal there was one big group, yet we were 50 different groups. That was all under Lausanne. And that excited me about what Lausanne could do, working together to accomplish much. So in closing, there's a conclusion there. Go one more. Okay. We need integrity today because our integrity is threatened by worldly pragmatism. The end justifies the means. We cook up reports to raise funds. We tell foundations things that are a bit exaggerated. We exaggerate the evangelistic results. We play around with budgets and overheads. We need integrity in the evangelical world as never before. We need theological integrity. We need moral integrity. And there's a big challenge for this. We need vision, because the materialistic lifestyle of young people is making them choose the jobs that will pay for the mission field. You can join some aid organizations and make more than you could make at home and still be considered a missionary. Is this the simpler lifestyle? Nobody talks about the graduated tithe, where as your income goes, you should give a larger percentage of your money to the Lord. I was taught that in Lausanne. I don't see too many people. Nobody talks about living below your standard for the cause of the kingdom. These are things we don't talk about in evangelicalism as we've come of age. And cooperation is threatened by selfish individualism. How many evangelical mergers have you heard of? Very few. All sorts of banks and institutions merge for the common good, for the win-win situation. Evangelical groups keep multiplying and everyone starts his own organization. We need Lausanne today more than ever. Doug talked about the program, the Congress in 2010, and I'm closing with that. We're planning a Congress in 2010. I've been asked to be in charge of a program. And tomorrow after lunch, Doug and I will be meeting with any of you who want to help with that program. We want a Congress that will be built from the bottom up. So we want your input. We don't want you to say some committee of people who don't understand us planned it. We want the younger leaders here in Malaysia to help us plan the 2010 event, to help in a lot of aspects. I'm asking especially in the program aspect. One of our dreams is that even if we have 5,000 or 6,000 people or 10,000 people in one location, we will have mobilized 1 million Christians around the world before, during, and after that event. We want to connect it all through some kind of internet, broadband. I will finish. It's my last comment. Broadband connection. We want those who are technically minded like you to be able to think with us how we can help thousands of Christians around the world feed into the program electronically. So we get feedback from Christians all over the world. Young people who would never think, would never be invited to the big Congress in 2010, but shaping it. And we want Bible schools and universities and churches to follow the event. We want to have a state-of-the-art event where the opening and closing ceremonies would be like the Olympic. All Christians would want to watch them. And then during the week, Christians can choose to take seminars, even if they're in Los Angeles or Kuala Lumpur or Hong Kong or Johannesburg. Wherever the Congress is, we want to be able to link it up electronically to make it interactive, to make it an open source. You guys understand what that means. An open source conference rather than a proprietary conference. We don't want it to be an elitist thing, which you feel left out from. We want it to be like Wikipedia and Skype, something that we can all participate. How many of you use Skype or similar things to communicate? Okay? We want to make like Wikipedia, Christopedia, where you would have Christians give all their, an incredibly big depository of Christian materials, free of charge, articles you've written, things you might have thought of, and we all benefit from them. So we're asking you to come tomorrow, and if you don't come and you can't come, send us your suggestions to lfreeprogram@lausanne.org. We apologize to the Brits that we didn't spell program in the British way, but it's just a little bit easier to remember in the American way. So we hope you'll be with us tomorrow. We're dreaming of an event that will be an inspiration to the whole world, that will be a message to the whole world, and we can't do it without you. Thank you, and may God bless you.